Ciao, here's a conversation with Igor Mesic. So today I really don't have a presentation. I've just finished recording the episode. I'm really excited because it was interesting. And so I decided to convey the excitement instead of writing things down and reading them. So the conversation was insightful, technically speaking, because the work of Professor Mesic is relevant for my research. But also I would say it was interesting in terms of ethics and meaning. What's the position, what's the place for science, for men in the universe, but also for a scientist in the universe. And it was also philosophically deep, I would say. We touched on the implications of his operator perspective of dynamical systems on the stochastic appearance of quantum mechanics. And I think his perspective is particularly compelling. We also talked about the relation between the recurrence theorem in measure-preserving dynamical systems and the philosophy of Nietzsche, in particular the eternal return, what that means for the ideas related to the multiverse. And that was really interesting. Then, of course, we talked about the importance of Koopman theory in dynamical system theory, also in data-driven dynamical system theory. So not necessarily, for example, Hamiltonian systems, but more general ones. We talked about time delay embedding, so how to get rid of the Markovian assumption about nature and how is this powerful to model it. We talked about complex system theory, how this operator's perspective can be useful in that regard. We talked about, of course, the implications of his ideas for celestial mechanics and aerospace engineering in general. And so, yeah, I hope you enjoyed the episode as well. If you like it, put a thumbs up, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Then please subscribe, follow me on Twitter, follow me on LinkedIn, support me on Patreon, and enjoy the episode. The schedule is like a draft of things I'm interested in, things I think resonate with your work, at least the things that came in my mind looking into your work. But if we end up talking about, for example, energy efficiency and the human condition, I'm more than happy to explore that as well.
Those are the difficult topics, right?
Yeah. Just today I was talking to colleagues about defining some. I mean, I have a philosophy book in my bedside, defining why working in technical things. And I don't even know how to express that. The nature of sacrifice in a technical career, something like that.
That's a great topic. Probably a topic for a different podcast. But in my view, it's difficult to call it a sacrifice. The reason being that people who go into these types of careers are usually very passionate about that type of a career. I don't think it's the only career that people in technical professions were able to pursue, but they decided to go to this one because they were passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the sacrifice is a word, but also these kinds of elements come because of passion, some sort of obsession with the, you know, for many people, I think making the world better through technology. And I'm certainly an optimist with respect to that. I think we've been able to, you know, control the advancements in technology with, of course, some terrible periods where we didn't. But hopefully we learned from it. Anyhow, that's my comment on.
Yeah. Okay. You know, yeah, I guess it's a good starting point. Also, you mentioned before we started recording your interest in energy efficiency and the impact of your research as a whole. So maybe before I start asking what's Koopman theory and all of that, maybe you can say a bit more about your practical interests you have for your work.
It's interesting because we will talk, I think, for the rest of the discussion on Koopman theory. But my interest and my let's say, obsession with the Koopman theoretic type approach really came in a big way from a practical standpoint. So maybe I'll describe the following. I certainly used Koopman operator theory in my thesis way back, you know, 90 to 94 at Caltech.
Mm-hmm.
I used it to detect invariant sets.
Right.
And I think we'll talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. I used it specifically to compute invariant sets that are not smooth. So in chaotic systems that might have fractal, you know, invariant subsets and so on. So that's where my initial interest started from. But it did come from an applied question, which is, you know, can you find invariant sets in fluid flows?
Mm-hmm.
That was the question of the time, chaotic advection and those sorts of
mm-hmm.
problems. But later on, I worked with a friend and colleague of mine at United Technologies Research Center. United Technologies is now Raytheon. It's one of the biggest companies in the world in, let's say, mechanical engineering space. Mm-hmm. They have Pratt and Whitney jet engines, and they used to have, you know, all these elevators. They restructured, so I don't know all the details of various technologies, but I spoke to them quite a bit, consulted for them, and it turned out that the current methodologies in control and systems theory were not quite capable of capturing some questions or answering some questions like, oh, if I have a tabletop version of my jet engine, so scaled down, and I detect an instability, is the same thing going to happen on a big engine? How can I detect this? Is it a real instability? I mean, is it just cycling with a lot of noise or a real instability, like a very noisy hop bifurcation, right? So mm-hmm. transition to a limit cycle, some large-scale oscillations. And so it turned out that the Koopman operator theory helped me answer that question as well. And that was related to another eigenfunction, not the eigenfunction that defines invariant sets. And so mm-hmm. I kept thinking about these things. Then Koopman modes, you know, I found this concept of Koopman modes
mm-hmm.
And thought, oh, this could be useful because people are trying to decompose fluid flows.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, while some aspects of this were, you know, a lot of aspects of this are still proving theorems, I mean, being very mm-hmm. rigorous about it, my own motivation in a lot of cases came from understanding that if I solved that particular problem, I could have an impact on a very applied problem. And then almost invariably, I found a solution in somewhere in Koopman operator theory, in various mm-hmm. different aspects of it. And so
right.
that's a little, you know, brief history of how it came about for me.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. It's nice also to see the interplay between different technical fields, let's say, and how in particular, I mean, at least for me, the influence of fluid dynamics in celestial mechanics has been growing and growing in the last decades. I mean, this goes back to Zebehey that wrote in the 60s a book with a section specifically mentioning the, I think, the fluid dynamics equivalence, something like that. But I mean, more and more also, it's interesting to see that while dynamic mode decomposition came out independently in some sense
yes.
from Koopman operator theory, it was still applied to fluid dynamics and it was still shown to be applicable to a number of ranges, ranges of dynamical systems. So yeah, maybe we could start talking a bit about the application of Koopman theory. First of all, what Koopman theory is, and then the application of it for detection of invariant sets.
Okay, so fundamentally speaking, Koopman operator theory is the theory that describes, in modern view, the theory that describes data evolution or evolution of time-dependent processes using observables on those time-dependent processes. And I'm being very intentional in not saying start with a dynamical system,
mm-hmm.
you know, start with a state space and then figure out some observables in the state space. For example, pressure is an observable. Pressure at the point is an observable in a combustion chamber. I'm being very intentional not to start from the state space, because to me, really, it's an operator on the collection of observables that we have. And to start with, that can be extremely broad. Just imagine all the different observables that you can extract or measure from a given process. The power of it stems from the fact that even if you had a single observable, and this is a very nice close connection to classical dynamical systems theory in the form of Takens' theorem, even if you had a single observable, this is a useful framework. Namely, taking a sufficient number of time delays, given that might be infinity, but let's talk about this a little further, and you will see that in many cases it's finite. One can construct a theory, a model. And so the AI view today is really as an exceptionally good modeling tool in the era where, you know, we are thinking that everything is going to be modeled by neural networks. I think the operator theoretic model is the starting point, and the neural networks are elements of functional approximation that can be used to fill the gaps, to use instead of Fourier transforms and things like that, that we used in the past to provide approximations. So just to kind of summarize, I view it today as a modeling theory, although it did come out from trying to describe an alternative point of view to state space methods. The truth of the matter is that it can describe processes that are not amenable today. We cannot really write down a model. And that's an important distinction to me, because we are using it in a different way than, you know, the luminaries, the Koopman and von Neumann, really envisioned it. We are actually using it in a different, I would say, powerfully different way. And of course, they didn't have access to computers, although von Neumann invented the architecture, but you know, they didn't have the same benefits of development that we have.
Right. And how is this related to invariant sets?
So one of the first and interesting things, and that does come from Koopman and von Neumann original paper, Koopman paper in 1931, and then follow up with von Neumann, is that I was asking this question in conservative systems, so in systems that preserve measure. Okay, we know in some cases, for example, for Hamiltonian systems, that you have this nice smooth invariant, which is the Hamiltonian. But there are many other invariants, especially in chaotic systems. There actually still are many invariants besides the Hamiltonian, typically. What I realized is that one can actually characterize all the invariants of a dynamical system from the eigenspace at one for discrete time systems of the Koopman operator associated with that system. And now we're starting from state space, really. This is 1992, a long time ago. And then the idea was, well, if you can do that, just put a basis on the state space, find the invariants by using time averaging. That's another thing that generalized very nicely today. I was in my thesis. And if you take an arbitrary function and find its time average along the trajectories and associate with the initial condition, you get a new function, right? So take an initial condition, take the time average of an arbitrary function, non-constant, arbitrary function along trajectories, and associate the value that you get of the time average with the initial condition. Interestingly, the associated function of initial condition is an invariant. And that relationship is one-to-one. So all the invariants are, in fact, time averages of functions. And pretty much obviously, time averages of functions are actually invariants. So that gives one a nice characterization of all the invariants, pretty much an arbitrary measure preserving dynamical system. It doesn't really have to be you have to be Hamiltonian. And if you apply this, as we did later, to dissipative systems, you actually find basis of attract, or rather, you find indicator functions on basis of attraction. So you can extend it to dissipative systems.
Right.
So yeah, but that provided the first insight into saying, oh, this could be useful because time averages can be obtained from data. If you're observing something, the only thing that you need to have the ability to do is prepare your system from different initial conditions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have access to a number of different experimental initial conditions, or for that matter, if your trajectory goes through a sufficient number of initial conditions, you will know some aspect of the invariant structure. And since those time averages that can be obtained from data give you eigenfunctions, then it's a natural question, well, how about other eigenfunctions? These are mm-hmm. eigenfunctions at one, right? So how about the other eigenfunctions? And that's what I proceeded to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as you said, this not only does not apply only to Hamiltonian systems, because it applies in general to measure preserving, also dissipative ones, to some extent. This implies also that it's not necessary for the system to be geometrically similar, so diffeomorphic to a linear one, but it can be a general one, anyway, a chaotic one.
Yeah, this is a great question because I find a lot of confusion out there, even from people, you know, that have very, very strong background. There is this impression that, oh, the system needs to be globally linearizable in order for this to work. That's patently not true. You can mm-hmm. you can have systems with a variety of different basis of attraction, a system with a variety of different basis of attraction. You can, to start with, you can answer the question, well, you know, can you characterize the basis of attraction in the observable space? Or mm-hmm. the other way around, can you use the observables and measurements to characterize basis of attraction? And here we're talking about all the way to chaotic attractors. There is really no real restriction there. The other aspect is, you know, how does this apply to chaotic attractors? And the aspect that is, I think, not so well understood, although we've written it in papers since a long, long time ago, is that there is a very, very nice splitting that happens in Koopman operator theory. You have to set up appropriate function spaces in order for it to work. But once you do, there is a very nice splitting between what I would call a regular part of dynamics that contains both transients and perhaps quasi-periodic motions. Quasi-periodic, including fixed points, which is quasi, you know, periods, yeah, period zero, but limit cycles, quasi-periodic attractors, anything regular of that type. And I'm simplifying because I'm not talking about exact technical conditions, but those types of systems, they are all characterized by point spectrum, and even some transient dynamics, point spectrum of the operator. The chaotic parts of the dynamics are contained in the continuous part of the spectrum. And so in order to understand the properties of chaotic attractors, actually beyond saying the attractor is mixing, that's a great statement. It took a very, very long time to prove it, and it's a brilliant accomplishment by Luzzatto and Melbourne, I believe, were the co-authors on that. But you can ask the question, well, is there something within that mixing dynamics that is coherent, at least on finite timescales?
Mm-hmm.
And what we discovered recently, this is perhaps 3-4 years ago, is that there is. So for example, in the pseudo spectrum of the Koopman operator, so you don't have eigenfunctions, we know that, but in the pseudo spectrum of the operator, there are these pseudo eigenfunctions that when you look at their contour sets, they actually give you the partitioning of the attractor itself, in which you literally see coherent structures.
Okay.
So this is now a little bit of a sub theme. So the first paper on this is by Milan Korda and Mihai Putinar and myself, I believe, and then Dimitri Giannakis.
Right.
Published a paper in which he found it with compactification methods. And now I think there is a variety of interest in this particular topic as to how do you characterize chaotic attractors beyond their mixing property. And the Koopman operator theory might have some unique answers to that. It's a little bit difficult to see how exactly you get this from pure trajectory analysis.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think this is again relevant for celestial mechanics because, I mean, again, from Zbehej, there's a paper late 90s about the papers for the next millennium. And one of these was about the use of ideas from statistical mechanics. So, for example, one of these could be considering not single trajectories, but ensembles and consider keep forward this jump from Newton to Poincaré, even forward in some sense, to stop considering single trajectories, but look at the geometry and from there even the and then I would say introduce this functional analysis inspired perspective that allows one to look for things that are even deeper in the dynamics. I mean, I'm lost because I'm thinking about the works of Giannakis I read, but they're really a bit above my head at this moment. So, I would say it's definitely an interesting perspective that raises the question whether chaos is a manifestation of stochasticity in some sense, of noise, or the opposite. So do you think there's some value in doing the opposite in stochastic dynamical systems, so to consider it as the appearance of chaos in some sense?
Yeah, let me comment on two different things. One is, ergodic theory in itself, which arose right after Perkov proved the the famous pointwise ergodic theorem, and then von Neumann proved the theorem in the mean. It is basically where this point of view started. If you look at Koopman and von Neumann, I believe the paper came out in 1932, analyzing dynamical systems with continuous spectrum, you will see them saying that the underlying system has as chaotic a trajectory as any stochastic system. Mm-hmm. So, the theory of chaos, of course, took off in 63 with Lorentz, because he found this strange behavior, chaotic behavior in a physical system. So that meant a lot. But if you look at whether Koopman and von Neumann, for example, knew that you can have chaotic dynamics in deterministic dynamical systems, they certainly did. And they did it from the perspective of, they understood it from the perspective of Koopman operator theory and the fact that systems could have a continuous spectrum. And I do think it was pretty clear to them that the analysis from the perspective of invariant sets, invariant quantities, eigenfunctions, and so on, would be fruitful in contrast with just understanding of trajectories. I think that was implicit, okay. In some places pretty explicit.
Yeah.
And the ergodic theory took up that point of view. So if you look at the theory of partitions in ergodic theory, that I ended up expanding to, dissipative systems, and defining things like transient partitions, which are not quite there in measure preserving systems. They looked at dynamical systems using the lens of partitions, so groups of trajectories, not and positive measure groups very often, right, of trajectories, rather than a single trajectory. One of the most influential books, I would say, in dynamical systems was that of Lasota and Mackey, on that essentially contained a probabilistic point of view on deterministic systems.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is really, take a stochastic system. Does it have a Koopman operator associated with it? And, you know, the way I've defined it back in 05 is certainly does. Now, in a stochastic system, if let's say we are in discrete time, from a single point, you can jump to many different points, not to a single one, right? Because mm-hmm. the jump forward is random. So what you do is you take an observable, again, just like you do in Koopman theory, in regular Koopman deterministic theory, and you observe the value of all of the function over all these places where the next step is. And then you take an expectation, you take an average mm-hmm. over the observations, and you again get an operator.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you're taking an observable and you're essentially producing a new function via this operator that provides you with the average values of what is going to be observed in the next step.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of it is that, of course, this description now includes deterministic dynamical systems, because if you just take your expectation to be a delta, you know, over a delta measure as to where you're jumping, then you get deterministic system, and there is really no patching. Mm-hmm. You can easily slide from deterministic setting to continuous setting. So what happens then is you can say, well, you know, if the spectra are the same, are the stochastic system and the deterministic system same in some sense? And that's something that I kind of proposed in a 2005 paper, that one should be, you know, one could model even nonlinear dynamical systems with an underlying linear structure, even when they're chaotic, with an underlying mm-hmm. linear structure plus noise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in our prior discussion, you mentioned Havok by yep. the Washington group. And in fact, that, you know, is an attempt to realize that idea that mm-hmm. I described in 2005 paper. They came to it independently, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's an attempt to realize that idea that chaotic dynamics can be described as deterministic plus some noise, but one has to be very careful as to what is lost in the story. What is lost is now you have really lost the ability to recover individual trajectories, because individual trajectories of the stochastic system are going to be different. Despite the same spectrum, they are going to be different than an underlying deterministic system, right?
Mm-hmm.
In general. And so for long-term prediction, for those kinds of analysis, those ideas are good. And mm-hmm. as I said, as a predecessor, we pursued them a while ago, just saying, well, okay, if you want to model a chaotic dynamical system, you can put on some structure that is deterministic and then add stochasticity. If you look at others, we pursue the same idea, you know, Maida at Courant, and then I think Dimitri Giannakis was also playing with these types of ideas and ultimately came to Koopman operator theory as mm-hmm. as a way of developing these ideas, you know, in a fully rigorous form, where you really have an underlying deterministic dynamical system, but you're modeling it as a stochastic one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Still a very interesting topic, I should say.
Right. Yeah, no, it's beautiful. I have two questions. The first one is going back to what you mentioned about the beginning of ergodic theory. You said Birkhoff is a predecessor of von Neumann's work, right? It was
concurrent, really. Von Neumann was pursuing the theorem in the mean. And at the time claimed that that's all you need, because in statistical mechanics, you just need things in Hilbert space and everything is good. Birkhoff proved the theorem in the context of a single trajectory.
Okay.
The ironic thing is, despite the fact that, you know, the genius of level von Neumann said, well, we don't, you know, nice work, Gerrit, mm-hmm. but we don't need anything more than in the mean. We wouldn't have any modern Koopman operator theory from data-driven one if we didn't have Birkhoff's theorem.
Okay.
All the results that I did since my thesis on you know generalized Laplace analysis type results really rely on the fact that you can prove ergodic theorems along individual trajectories, mm-hmm. you know, point-wise. And so von Neumann was wrong in that case.
Right.
Wrong judging the value, not wrong in proving the theorem, wrong in judging uh-huh. the value of what point-wise results provide. We wouldn't be able to claim, you know, results with probability one today if we didn't have mm-hmm. the Birkhoff.
Okay, so there's still, I mean, it's not like Koopman and therefore von Neumann are canceling out relevant things for.
No, absolutely not. But for the analysis that we're doing today, where very often, as I said, you know, in a jet engine, you have a single probe. In an engine, you're getting a single stream of data along a single trajectory. Therefore, that von Neumann is not enough.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For Neumann's mean ergodic theorem is not enough.
Yeah. And so would you say in general, because I mean, I would say individually, but also science, I would say, because of its nature to the willingness to understand, to predict, I find it difficult to give up the single trajectory perspective, even in chaotic dynamical systems. Because it doesn't make sense in some sense that we have a dynamical system and we are not able to predict it, to integrate it. I mean, the idea that a system can be non-integrable and deterministic at the same time is really difficult to grasp. Do you think we should get rid of this perspective and go into a qualitative description, or we can not give up to have a single trajectory description of chaotic dynamical systems?
Well. Look, the issue with individual trajectories in chaotic dynamical systems is, of course, that it's a pragmatic issue. Like, if you knew the initial conditions arbitrarily well, then of course you can make arbitrarily good predictions. So the question is really what is useful.
Yeah, right.
And so let me say the following. Suppose that we find an observable that starting from a trajectory that has sensitive dependence on initial conditions is still predictable over a much longer time span than the Lyapunov timescale.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get a combination, right? Because you know that to start with, I mean, that's what chaotic dynamical systems theory teaches us, that you cannot do it for arbitrary observables. You're going to get exponential divergence pretty much or anything. But of course, there is an observable on which you can predict for all time, right? It's the constant. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm ridiculously simplifying the situation, but I'm making a larger point. So you can keep the trajectory point of view, provided you restrict your question, or rather give a question that the trajectory point of view can effectively answer. Mm-hmm. That's my point, right? Yeah. So you don't abandon, and I certainly never did, my approach to dynamical systems theory is an amalgamation of geometric single trajectory methods and operator theoretic approach. I certainly never abandoned that, mm-hmm. but I'm looking for the benefit that you can get from operator theoretic approach when you lose the benefits, all mm-hmm. you know, some of the benefits of the single trajectory approach. Hopefully that explains at least how I feel. I'm very, very far from saying abandon.
Yeah.
The trajectory approach. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you can get pretty substantial benefits by looking at an operator theoretic approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Combined with the geometric one.
Right. And I'm also thinking if there's, I mean, probably it's been explored already, but the implications of this perspective on complex systems, and I've been fascinated by the results of Giorgio Parisi, the Nobel Prize in Physics, 2021, whether this operator perspective could be used even for stochastic systems to identify critical transitions, stochastic resonance, things like this.
So there is already some work that has been done on, for example, bifurcations, mm-hmm. identifying bifurcations from an operative theoretic point of view. And the reason why I think that's fruitful is that you don't really need a prior reduction. If you're going directly from data, for example, mm-hmm. you can identify bifurcations and critical behavior simply by watching the operator go, you know, change the parameter and the operator changes its spectrum. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, when you have the critical type transition, the spectrum actually for a moment for that parameter value becomes continuous, even though the system is very much, you know, point spectrum. Mm-hmm. At that point, at the critical transition, the spectrum becomes continuous. And that, I think, is really, really interesting, right? Because again, you have a phenomenon that you can characterize from a trajectory point of view, viewing it in simple models. And when you connect it to an operative theoretic approach, now you suddenly have a tool that allows you to generalize that to literally an arbitrary setting, dynamical setting, where you can also identify the universality in systems by contrasting their spectrum. Mm-hmm. So that diffeomorphism that we started, or, you know, in lighter situations, just a topological conjugacy, mm-hmm. it can tell you something about whether two systems are the same and they have some level of universality, because the Koopman spectrum itself is the universality class, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the systems that have some level of conjugacy are in the same quote unquote universality class. The spectrum is going to be the same. The eigenfunctions won't, but the spectrum is going to be the same. So yes, I see a lot of connectivity mm-hmm. here. Not enough work has been done mm-hmm. on going to the types of systems that Professor Parisi studied, but I believe that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it seems when you said about the bifurcation, the moment in which basically the system appears chaotic in a certain value of the parameter at the bifurcation.
A very interesting point. It is not necessary for a system to be chaotic to have continuous spectrum.
Okay, yes. That was another question. Okay.
So if, you know, typically, or rather, there is the other way around. If the system is chaotic with certain, you know, technical conditions on it, it's going to have continuous spectrum. You have to define the spaces to be precise and so on and so forth. Here we're talking about systems like x dot is equal to x squared. They have no chaoticity to them, but you cannot represent them with a nice spectral expansions, because that would mean that the behavior of the trajectory is exponential in time, and it's not. And x is equal to x squared, things blow up in finite time. Mm-hmm. So it's super exponential. So you cannot describe it with a simple spectral expansion. And the consequence is that there is continuous spectrum.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that's
so every chaotic system has a continuous spectrum, and not the other way around.
And so this is a very important question, because this is a cause of confusion out there. I just wrote a paper a couple of years ago where I showed, you know, that integrable systems of the type that I think you're interested in celestial mechanics, the type that are described in Moser's book,
mm-hmm.
Celestial Mechanics, these systems that are action angle systems, but they're not harmonic.
Yeah, right.
In Koopman world, they have continuous spectrum. And the reason for that is that every single trajectory has its own frequency of rotation. Mm-hmm. And so on every single frequency, you can put a trajectory, you can put a delta function that corresponds to that trajectory with a sinusoidal shape, you know, with a harmonic shape that is actually going to behave like an eigenfunction, but it's not, because it's a delta, right? It's concentrated on a trajectory, so a zero measure set in the state space, and so it's not in the Hilbert space, and so you actually have continuous spectrum there with a perfectly you know, integrable system. And indeed, if you go from a single trajectory and measure the spectrum, you will get point spectrum. You have to combine all of these trajectories spectra together to understand the spectrum of the operator. Now, integrable systems from an operator theoretic point of view are not innocent, right? If you take a function that is, for example, it's one in the direction of the action, yes, and then over a finite width, and then it's zero everywhere else. So imagine a function is kind of like a block between two different actions, and then it's zero everywhere else, right? So it defines second. And now I'd vect it forward. Some elements of that function are going to go faster and some slower, and you're going to get basically, you know, a mixed a field of ones. The function was one on that segment of ones and zeros over a long time. That's just going to happen algebraically in time. It's not going to happen exponentially, but you see that you get some kind of a complex dynamics there in the functional space, and that's due to continuous spectrum, really.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's clarifying. Thanks for me, because I had this confusion about chaoticity, continuous spectrum. What's necessary for something to be true, and what's sufficient? So this kind of relations.
Yeah, I understood there was some confusion about that in the field. So I actually wrote up this example. You know, the technical aspects of this to prove it is not. I mean, you do have to work a little bit. So maybe that's why the confusion was out there, because it's not, maybe post facto everything is obvious, right?
Yeah, to come up, it's not clear. Coming from down, but yeah. So let's say going back to saying this moment in the bifurcation in which there's no chaoticity, but there's this continuous spectrum, sounds a lot similar to the Havok perspective. So the time delay embedding combined with Koopman, in which this controller, this external input that's making you jump, let's say qualitatively, and that looks kind of like a critical transition. Not sure if that's true.
Maybe I'm not sure the connection is explicitly there. I view that aspect more as what I talked about before, which is that there is some structure on the attractor, and that there are events that are driven by noise that kind of spoil that structure. In the example of bifurcation, you really have regular dynamics. The aspect that changes there is really that you don't have an exponential representation. So it's a little bit different in spirit. I don't think that x dot is equal to x squared. You should be representing as a coherent part of noise.
Right.
And I don't think that particular connection. Well, at least from where I stand right now, but.
Yeah, no, it's not. It was not explicit there. I was just thinking, reading things. A question about, let's say, your, I would say, philosophical perspective. Does God play dice, as Einstein famously said? Is nature deterministic? Is it stochastic? I mean, because we are talking about bringing this quantum mechanics perspective, classical mechanics.
Well, this is. This has been actually an interest of mine for the last 5-6 years, because the question, so let me go roundabout, right, to that question. The question that really interested me and shocked me to a certain extent, that Koopman and von Neumann themselves didn't observe the following. Or maybe they did, and they didn't, you know, they didn't think it's fruitful. So let's see. Mm-hmm. So if a dynamical system has an operator associated with it, and you can do analysis based on that operator, and if one believes that what we are observing as we walk around this earth is a dynamical system,
mm-hmm.
even as we are observing quantum effects, the idea would be there is a dynamic, so postulate that there is actually a deterministic dynamical system behind it.
Mm-hmm.
There must be an operator associated with it, yes?
Mm-hmm.
So that operator somehow has to be equivalent to Schrödinger when you're not relativistic. Fair?
Yeah.
If not, so what I'm trying to say is that the Koopman operator really provides you with a unique litmus test. So if there is a deterministic dynamical system, then there is an operator associated with it, and that must be equivalent to whatever quantum operator is operating, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
To give you probabilities.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we, you know, in probabilities, we're talking about the adjoint, but if you go forward, just take the dual of Schrödinger and,
mm-hmm.
and you get something that's, you know, should be related to Koopman. So if you adopt that, then you can go ask, well, can I invent a dynamical system that has a Schrödinger equation as a consequence, for example,
mm-hmm.
or and Dirac? Turns out that exists. So I actually gave a talk recently at a physics colloquium in Germany that. You can actually look it up on my YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's in one of the playlists on transfer operator approach to relativistic wave function.
Okay.
So you can actually derive this in a full relativity context, and you get an equation that when you assume that you're at non-relativistic speeds, you actually derive Schrödinger. Mm-hmm. So the answer to the question is there a dynamical system that produces the Koopman operator equivalent to quantum mechanical, you know, backward operator? The answer to that is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's all I can say from an entirely rigorous point of view. But as you can imagine, that leads me to answer, no, God doesn't play dice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can see that everything that we are seeing can be realized by an underlying, you know, dynamical system that's also associated with perhaps a field that has its own dynamical behavior. And the reason why we are seeing what we're seeing is really the quote unquote randomness
right.
in those fields, but they do have their own dynamics. We just don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I stand now. Okay. This is difficult having just watched the last Spider-Man movie because, you know, this would imply that the multiverse doesn't exist.
But. Okay. I saw that one. You mean the cartoon, right?
No, there is actually a movie, live movie, in which the whole premise is this.
Right. Movie. Also in the movie, right? Yes.
Famous interpretation of quantum mechanics that says that, you know, there are multiple.
Right.
And this point of view says no, not really. It's more along what Einstein and Schrödinger himself thought. Schrödinger never really accepted the probabilistic interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to find the deterministic underlying concept right. for a long time. My point is that the right framework within which to analyze that is the question that I just asked.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, you know, is there that deterministic dynamical system that gives you the same equations? Now, if you look back at Bohm and de Broglie, then you will see that same idea was answered in that sense. The proposal that I have is a little bit different. It doesn't have any of those pilot waves and hidden variables like that. So yeah, the proposal that I give is different. And that is basically that we might be looking at the trajectories of a dynamical system through a field, like when you're looking at a coin at the bottom of the pool, and the wave field on the top is kind of spoiling your view. And so the coin seems to be moving. The only reason you know it's not is that your brain tells you it's a coin. I know what this is. It's not moving, right? But the field is giving you that randomness. And the field itself has an equation associated with it. So yeah, I have a different proposal. And but it turns out to give, you know, the classical equations of quantum mechanics. I'm writing a paper on that now, but the talk is already online. So
I will check it. And it's also interesting. I mean, then I have another, let's say, philosophical question. But before that, I'd like to mention that I stumbled upon this work by Bruno, which is a celestial mechanicist at Princeton. And he did a work on trying to put together Schrödinger equation with ballistic capture. So let's say critical transitions in some sense in celestial mechanics. And so I think it would be interesting now to approach the same paper with this perspective that you just mentioned.
I think the answer is somewhere there. It's not a complete answer because, of course, you could have a deterministic realization. You could also have a stochastic realization. We just talked about it, right? Mm-hmm. You could have something like a Havok point of view, and you could have a purely deterministic point of view. And perhaps our measurements are not capable of distinguishing between them. So it ends up being just a belief. But you know, we do have a deterministic theory that is trying to couple the two, which is string theory. And one thing I can tell you, and if you watch my talk, you will see it, that actually there is a point of contact. If you assume that string theory is correct, you will find that this theory coming directly from this transfer operator, Koopman operator point of view is matches it. So it does have a prediction that matches the one that string theory would make. And that's very interesting to me because that kind of gives a little bit of additional strength. Mm-hmm. I should say that because of the presence of this observation field, it's not the Koopman operator, but something that's called a weighted Koopman operator that I derived in that case.
Okay.
So maybe that's why Koopman and von Neumann, because if you look at harmonic oscillator, of course, from a Koopman perspective, you're looking at a nonlinear observational harmonic oscillator, you will get the base frequency omega twice in the spectrum, twice the base frequency, three times and so on. So n times omega, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the quantum mechanical harmonic oscillator, you're going to get that 1/2, right? H bar omega. So there is a part that is n H bar omega that is just like Koopman, right? Spectrum.
I'm not following you, but okay.
It's just a nonlinear observation. But there is another part, and that comes from the weighted Koopman operator. So it's not a pure Koopman operator. Right. So maybe that's why they didn't quite get there.
Right.
I'm guessing. It would be nice to have them around.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. The philosophical question was the following. So you said there's no multiverse. If God doesn't play dice, then there's no multiverse. Yeah. But then I'm not even sure what the premise of the recurrence theorem is. Do you need to have an Hamiltonian system, a measure preserving? I'm not sure.
A measure preserving. You're talking about the Poincaré.
Yeah, yes. Because I've been thinking recently about the connections between Poincaré's recurrence theorem and Nietzsche's eternal return, something like that. In his philosophy, he argues that time is circular and not linear. So if the everything, I don't know, if nature is deterministic and is also measure preserving, then there may be in some, I mean, it's not that there's the multiverse, but this thing is gonna happen.
Well, recurrence, I mean, this is quite an interesting question, and I'm probably out of, you know, getting a little bit out of my depth here, because of course one has to study these things very carefully. But I don't know if you know this, but Kurt Gödel has provided a solution to Einstein's equations of general relativity that in which the recurrent time shows up.
Okay, no, I didn't know. I knew Gödel just for logic.
So Einstein's equations don't disallow this possibility of recurrent time. And so that's where I'm going to stop, because that's a precise answer. Yeah. And it just means, well, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There is a solution. There is a cosmology that allows for recurrent time.
Mm-hmm.
So that would not be multiverse. I mean, there you're correct. It wouldn't collide with anything I said. It would just mean that there was another moment in time when things looked very, very similar, but slightly different, right?
Yeah,
and they would end up evolving, and they would end up evolving in a very, very different direction, because supposedly you have sensitivity to initial conditions.
Right.
So that's actually an interesting possibility. As I was, you know, working, I was working on a very specific technical question, which is, can you have a deterministic dynamical system, maybe modulated through an observation that gives you the same equation as the Schrödinger? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is yes, not in the broad, you know, bomb sense of pilot wave, in a different way. So it's really a pure dynamical system, unmodulated,
mm-hmm.
but it's observed through a certain field. So I worked on that, and the answer there is yes. Now that begs the question, as you know, what with multiverse now? And your suggestion is an interesting one, which is, okay, if you had the recurrent time, then it would look like multiverse. It would look like you have a different universe, but it's just the same universe. Well, a similar universe.
Yeah, the key is that it's similar, not the same. Right.
We're, as I said, a little bit out of the technical domain, but in fact, you know, what we stated so far is just technical. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like those kinds of solutions do exist. An excellent question is whether one can ever do experiments or observations that would provide some kind of proof of that. That is unclear.